You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm ticked off. But it doesn't matter. We'll just go along with the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. I've got some special things for you today. Or should I say, Yahweh has some special things for you today. I hope you're enjoying the shows at EFR. I hope that you're liking the videos. You know, it only takes a second to hit the thumbs up for the video. It means a lot to us. We love to hear your comments. And also, we'd love you to share the videos. The first thing, I just want to hit a little tidbit that I've been meaning to mention to all of you. I used to listen to Bill Cooper. And I've spoken about it before to you. And it's funny because I told you that Bill Cooper was the prototype. Or if I haven't told you this, I'm telling you now. Bill Cooper was the prototype for Alex Jones. That's why Bill Cooper had to be killed off. Yet he wasn't really killed, but that's all a psyop. He's still alive and well. But his replacement was Alex Jones. However, Alex Jones has the same job as Bill Cooper. He's a fearmonger of sorts. But one of the things, it's funny how Yahweh will teach me things in the least expected places. I'm very interested in woodworking and metalworking. And I'm viewing a lot of tutorials on YouTube on how to do these things, and just being around these very intelligent individuals, many of them, one can learn how to solve problems. I'm a pretty good problem solver, if I may say so myself. However, by just learning these things, I've become more bold as a problem solver, more willing to try to solve a problem that maybe I might have thought couldn't be solved. Well, I was watching an old man from Australia, and it was a very heart-touching video because he was an old Cooper. And he told us what the name Cooper meant. You see, he makes barrels. A Cooper makes barrels, buckets. And buckets used to be, wooden buckets were very, very useful and needed by the whole population in times past. Well, the old Cooper told us what the name Cooper means. You're going to love this. It means to contain. Yes, like a bucket, to contain water. But in terms of William Cooper, he was containing and focusing on anything but the Jews. There's a meme, or I like to call it mem, but some people say meme. You know, tomato, tomato, whatever you like. That it's not the Jews. Now, you'll hear David Icke say that. You'll hear Bill Cooper say that. You'll hear all kinds of people say, it's not the Jews. Ralph Epperson was another one of those. And then I just heard it recently on the Scariest Movie Ever channel. And he was showing how, and this is something I had forgotten about, the Israeli Knesset building, or not the Knesset, the Supreme Court building, has an Illuminati pyramid with an eye in it. And it was built and designed through the Rothschilds. And it's got all kinds of Masonic symbolism, etc., etc., etc. Well, he went on later and he talked about how it's not the Jews. That's such a lie. It is so pathetic. So anyway, back to Bill Cooper. His whole thing was to contain and to point away from the Jews. But what happened later in his radio show was he began to take calls. And that what's funny about Bill Cooper is he would always talk about the things going on, and he'd say, Judah P. Benjamin did this, and this Jew did that, and this Jew did this, and on and on and on and on. So he would always tell you and go out of his way to say, it's not the Jews. The Rothschilds do not ascribe to that wonderful religion of Judaism. The holy religion of Judaism. You all know, all my audience knows that Judaism is a wonderful religion, isn't it? Yeah, you know it's not. So in other words, he's saying that all these Jews and these bankers and everything, well, they no longer ascribe to the Jewish religion. They're in the Illuminati. So that's what it means to contain, to actually keep all this in a bucket and don't let the arrow ever point. Don't let it spill out. You get what I'm saying? Don't let it spill out that it's the Jews. Contain it, Mr. Cooper. And so later on, as I said, he began taking calls. And as anybody that is sincerely seeking the truth and that looks into truth in all matters, not just one focused matter, one will come to the conclusion that it's the Jews. It can not come out any other way. It just doesn't come out any other way. It's the Jews behind all of it. It's the Jews that corrupt man utterly, and this leads to the chaos I keep telling you about. So the callers would call up and say, but Bill, it's the Jews. And he would take a tantrum, screaming at the top of his lungs, I told you, I slamming on the, it's not the Jews. It's not the Jews. And, you know, it just cracks me up because, you see, these devils out there that set out to deceive you, and they set out to contain. Yahweh has a way of, if you're going to seek the truth, he'll reward you with the truth. He'll let you know who's doing it. And Bill didn't want them to know who was doing it. Bill didn't tell them that the Jews were behind Freemasonry. It's out, you know, it's way out, outlandish. And so, I thought you might enjoy how Yahweh may teach you some truth in just ways you would not even imagine. I had no idea that a Cooper was a bucket maker or a barrel maker, and it means to contain. But that, when the old man spoke it out of his mouth, I just smiled and began to chuckle. Because I'm able to connect these dots. So that's my little tidbit for this week. I do want to get to subject matter. And I'm going to tell you that this is a special week Because I was talking about the Arthurian legend where King Arthur, as a young man, you see, what happened in that legend was the young men would joust, the young men would sword fight and everything else, and somebody would get a chance at pulling the sword out of the stone. But nobody could pull the sword out of the stone. But a young man named Arthur came along, and he was able to pull the sword out of the stone. Thus, he became King Arthur, and he had his Knights of the Round Table. And we were speaking of this on the Pastor's Show. If you want to get a little bit of info on that, look at the recent one, the number two, part two from last week, which was part two of the thesis, the 95 theses of Martin Luther. So, I'm going to show you where the Arthurian legend came from. Excuse me. Goodness. I'm going to try to still continue on the mystery of Satan and the devil, part three, but I feel this is important because I wanted to refresh myself with it. I've read it before and I knew this connection. And so I want to share it with you today. Even Eli said he had not heard of it. So, if you have a minute, open up the book of Jasher if you want to read along with me, chapter 77. I'll take a sip of coffee. That's the book of Jasher. You can put it in your, I hate to say Google, put it in your search engine and just put the book of Jasher.pdf and ye shall have it. Okay, Jasher chapter 77. Adikam was 20 years old when he reigned over Egypt. He reigned 4 years. In the 206th year of Israel's going down to Egypt, did Adikam reign over Egypt. But he continued not so long in his reign over Egypt as his fathers had continued their reigns. For Melol, his father, reigned 94 years in Egypt. But he was 10 years sick and died, for he had been wicked before Yahweh. And all, you see, Yahweh had things to do with Egypt. And I know that the evil mystery religions will love to connect that and say, well, see, Yahweh was evil. He had to do with Egypt. Well, you have to realize that a lot of things in Egypt that they are telling you are evil are not evil. Remember that it was a great empire when it was a white empire. But remember, it degraded like America is degrading right before our eyes. And when the evil slipped in and the corruption slipped in, chaos ensued. It's the same progression, ladies and gentlemen. I am repeating myself for a reason. And all the Egyptians called the name of Adikam Pharaoh, like the name of his fathers, as was their custom to do in Egypt. All the wise men of Pharaoh called the name of Adikam Ahuz, for short, is called Ahuz in the Egyptian language. And Adikam was exceedingly ugly, and he was a cubit and a span, and he had a great beard which reached the soles of his feet. And Pharaoh sat upon his father's throne to reign over Egypt, and he conducted the government of Egypt in his wisdom. And whilst he reigned, he exceeded his father and all the preceding kings in wickedness, and he increased his yoke over the children of Israel. And he went with his servants to Goshen, to the children of Israel, and he strengthened the labor over them, and he said unto them, complete your work, each day's task, and let not your hands slacken from our work from this day forward, as you did in the days of my father. And he placed officers over them from amongst the children of Israel, and over these officers he placed taskmasters from amongst his servants. And he placed over them a measure of bricks for them to do according to that number, day by day, and he turned back and went to Egypt. At that time, the taskmasters of Pharaoh ordered the officers of the children of Israel according to the command of Pharaoh, saying, thus say Pharaoh, do your work each day, and finish your task, and observe the daily measure of bricks, diminish not anything. And it shall come to pass that if you are deficient in your daily bricks, I will put your young children in their stead. Well, you can certainly see these weren't Negroes, right? Because they wouldn't be able to be up to this task. So there goes your theory about Negroes in Egypt, earlier Egypt. And the taskmasters of Egypt did so in those days as Pharaoh had ordered them. And whenever any deficiency was found in the children of Israel's measure of their daily bricks, the taskmasters of Pharaoh would go to the wives of the children of Israel and take infants of the children of Israel to the number of bricks deficient. Really, this is a religious spirit right here. They would take them by force from their mother's laps and put them in the building instead of bricks. Whilst their fathers and mothers were crying over them and weeping, when they heard the weeping voices of their infants in the wall of the building, and the taskmasters prevailed over Israel, that the Israelites should place their children in the building, so that the man placed his son in the wall and put mortar over him, whilst his eyes wept over him, and his tears ran down upon his child. And the taskmasters of Egypt did so to the babes of Israel for many days, and no one pitied or had compassion over the babies of the children of Israel, or the babes. And the number of all the children killed in the building was 270. That equals a 9, ladies and gentlemen, because you dropped the 0. The number of the devil, again. 270. 2 and 7 is 9. Some of whom they had built upon instead of bricks, which had been left deficient by their fathers, and some of whom they had drawn out dead from the building. And the labor imposed upon the children of Israel in the days of Adikam exceeded in hardship that which they performed in the days of his father. And the children of Israel sighed every day on account of their heavy work. For they had said to themselves, you can certainly see that these aren't Jews. I mean, get it real here. The Jews wouldn't even be able to put up any bricks, never mind, nothing. So you can see that Jews are not involved in Israel. So let me repeat 22. And the children of Israel sighed every day on account of their heavy work, for they had said to themselves, behold, when Pharaoh shall die, his son will rise up and lighten our work. Then they increased the latter work more than the former, and the children of Israel sighed at this, and their cry ascended to God on account of their labor. And God heard the voice of the children of Israel and their cry in those days, and God remembered to them his covenant which he had made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God saw the burden of the children of Israel and their heavy work in those days, and he determined to deliver them. And Moses, here we go, and Moses the son of Amram, was still confined in the dungeon in those days, in the house of Reuel, the Midianite. And Zipporah, the daughter of Reuel, did support him with food secretly day by day. Now, I believe Reuel is Jethro. So the daughter had pity on him. This is one woman that has done good to the house of Israel. And Moses was confined in the dungeon in the house of Reuel 10 years. And at the end of 10 years, which was the first year of the reign of Pharaoh over Egypt, in the place of his father, Zipporah said to her father Reuel, "No person requires or seeks after the Hebrew man, whom thou didst bind in the prison now 10 years. Now therefore, if it seem good in thy sight, let us send and see whether he is living or dead." But her father knew not that she had supported him. And Reuel her father answered and said to her, "Has ever such a thing happened that a man should be shut up in a prison without food for 10 years and that he should live?" And Zipporah answered her father, saying, "Surely thou hast heard that the God of the Hebrews is great and awful, and does wonders for them at all times. He it was who delivered Abraham from Ur of the Chaldeans, and Isaac from the sword of his father, and Jacob from the angel of Yahweh who wrestled with him at the ford of Jabbok. Also, with this man he has done many things. He delivered him from the river in Egypt, and from the swords of Pharaoh, and from the children of Cush. So also can deliver him from famine and make him live." And the thing seemed good in the sight of Reuel, and he did according to the word of his daughter, and he sent to the dungeon to ascertain what became of Moses. And he saw, and behold, the man Moses was living in the dungeon, standing upon his feet, praising and praying to Yahweh, the God of his ancestors. You know, I must tell you that going through things out of prison is hard enough. But can you imagine that this man cared so little for another man that he didn't even seek to feed him for 10 years? So obviously when Reuel put him in that prison, he put him in there to die. And Reuel commanded Moses to be brought out of the dungeon. So they shaved him, and he changed his prison garments and ate bread. Afterward, Moses went into the garden of Reuel, which was behind the house, and there he prayed to Yahweh his God, who had done mighty wonders for him. And it was that whilst he prayed, he looked opposite to him, and behold, listen up, folks. Don't drift on me. This is the crux of this story here right now, and the Arthurian legend. And it was, this is verse 39, 13 times 3. And it was that whilst he prayed, he looked opposite to him, and behold, a sapphire stick was placed in the ground, which was planted in the midst of the garden. Where have we heard that before? In the midst of the garden. Verse 40. And he approached the stick, and he looked, and behold, the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of hosts, was engraved thereon, written and developed upon the stick. Are you hearing that? Are you with me? Are you listening? What are the chances that he would get out of prison and begin to pray to Yahweh outside the prison by himself in the garden, find a stick in the midst of the garden, a sapphire stick, and find that it had the name of Yahweh engraved thereupon. What are the chances of that? So listen. And he read it, and stretched forth his hand, and he plucked it like a forest tree from the thicket. And the stick was in his hand. And this is the stick with which all the works of our God were performed. After he had created the heavens and earth, all of the host of them, seas, rivers, and all their fishes. And when Yahweh had driven Adam from the Garden of Eden, he took the stick in his hand and went and tilled the ground from which it was taken. This is precious. This is precious that these things have not been known. But these things are being revealed to you, dear listener, right now. These things are things that you are not to know, according to the devil and his children. Imagine, I'd like to read it again. Verse 42. And this is the stick with which all the works of our God were performed. After he had created heaven and earth, and all the host of them, seas, rivers, and all their fishes, and when God, or Yahweh, had driven Adam from the Garden of Eden, he took the stick in his hand and went and tilled the ground from which he was taken. And the stick came down to Noah and was given to Shem and all his descendants until it came into the hand of Abraham the Hebrew. And when Abraham had given all he had to his son Isaac, he also gave him this stick. And when Jacob, I'm surprised Esau didn't steal it. You know? Esau was a thief. He was, no good through and through. And that's why Yahweh hated Esau. Esau had nothing. You know, Esau stole the garments from Nimrod. He chopped Nimrod's head off and stole the garments that were stolen, from Noah. They ended up, I think it was Ham stole them from Noah, and they ended up in Nimrod's hands. Yes. And so Esau chopped Nimrod's head off, and he stole those garments, and that's why he was running away, and he ended up with Jacob with the pot of lentils, where he gave up his birthright. You see, but, Comparé said the same thing, and I agree 100%. That wasn't when he really gave up his birthright. He gave his birthright up long before that. He gave his birthright up in the way he lived. He gave his birthright up in the way he married. He gave his birthright up in the way he hated his brother and wanted to kill him. And so many more things that could be mentioned. And when Abraham had given all he had, he also gave him the stick, as it says. And when Jacob had fled to Padan Aram, he took it into his hand, and when he returned to his father, he had not left it behind him. Also, when he went to Egypt, he took it into his hand and gave it to Joseph, one portion above his brethren, for Jacob had taken it by force from his brother Esau. Wow. And after the death of Joseph, the nobles of Egypt came into the house of Joseph And the stick came into the hand of Reuel the Midianite. That's Jethro, I believe. I'm pretty much positive. And when he went out of Egypt, he took it in his hand and he planted it in his garden. Now, interesting that Yahweh would say, okay, somebody stole my stick. And when he placed it in the garden, the thief didn't realize that nobody would be able to remove it from the garden except somebody of the tribe of Israel, and somebody of the tribe of Israel that Yahweh trusted and would allow to remove it. Tell me this isn't incredible. I mean, seriously. What a wonderful day. It's sunny out. It's beautiful. We are hearing the truths of Yahweh. We are finding out more about him. How many of you knew he had a stick with his name written upon it that was made out of sapphire? How many of you knew that he had that stick and it was used when he created the world? Well, today you know that. Thanks to Yahweh. And be thankful to him. Yahweh is all we have, ladies and gentlemen, other than each other. We, as Israelites, are alone in the world. Alone in a world that is turning into hell and increasing the denizens of hell on a daily basis. Be thankful that Yahweh has plucked you from this world as Moses has plucked this stick from the ground. Be thankful. Be full of hope. Love your brethren. Pray for each other. Pray for each other's countries. And try to help each other the best you can. You know, I lost a lot of friends over the years. Some were my fault, and others were because of my beliefs. But Yahweh has replaced those friends. And though they don't live in the same state as me or something like that, they live overseas. They live on the other side of the country. These friends have been better friends to me than any friends I've had my entire life. And I'm thankful to Yahweh, for these are our brothers and sisters. So, let's just finish this off here. There's only a few more verses. Excuse me. So he took that and planted, we're on verse 48 at the end, he took it in his hand and planted it in his garden. That's Reuel. And all the mighty men of the Kenites tried to pluck it when they endeavored to get Zipporah, his daughter, but they were unsuccessful. So that stick remained planted in the garden of Reuel until he came who had a right to it and took it. I love it. You see, that is the Arthurian legend. See, the mighty men and all the mighty men of the Kenites, K-I-N-I-T-E-S, tried to pluck it when they endeavored to get Zipporah, his daughter, but they were unsuccessful. Same thing as the knights I told you about at the beginning of the message. Nobody could pluck it until Arthur came along. So that stick, verse 50, remained planted in the garden of rule until he came who had a right to it and took it. And when rule saw the stick in the hand of Moses, he wondered at it, and he gave him his daughter Zipporah for a wife. So, I believe, you know, I'm going to go back into the book of Jasher from time to time. I want to continue on the mystery of Satan and the devil. But there's a wonderful, wonderful story that sheds light upon our past. You see, the Jew was not able to destroy the biblical characters the way they have destroyed all of the regular characters of the white race in their pursuit of destroying the image of God. Yes, they're always trying to destroy the image of God, and that is Adam and his offspring, which is the offspring of Yahweh. That's why the white man is being destroyed today. That's why the white man is being ridiculed, mocked, lied about, because it's to destroy the image. You see, when you see white race traders, they are fallen, deeply fallen, and they are destroying the image of God. And these filthy Jews wrote something about this, saying that that is the Sephiroth. Sephiroth, you know, their little thing in the garden there. They also believe that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is the Sephiroth. The Jews are very mentally ill in many ways, just about all ways. And we'll go into that some other time. But now let's continue where he left off last week. The annihilation is for God's, and he puts in parentheses, Yahweh's kingdom of Christian Israel in wars and mongrelization. Did you just hear that? See, I'm going to go over that sentence that we went over several times last week, and that's why this continues, so I'll do it. So, the devils would then move in and utterly corrupt man's spiritual, mental, ethical, and material fiber. You see, spiritual, mental, ethical, and material fiber would be your body. That's what they're doing to us today. They're destroying us spiritually, mentally, ethically, and physically. And it says, and in the chaos. See how corruption and chaos is together in the sentence? Again, the devils would then move in and utterly corrupt man's spiritual, mental, ethical, and material fiber. And in the chaos, which results from the corruption, man would be annihilated. See, that would be Whitey being gone. Man would be gone because the devil's kingdom would be the hybrids. So their bodies would all be corrupted. Their spirituality would be all corrupted. Their mental abilities would be all corrupted. And they would have no ethics. And thus, chaos would ensue. And this is the kind of world the devil wishes to rule over. No wonder they place him in hell, because hell is chaos. Hell is full of corruption. So the annihilation that that when it says man would be annihilated, they're speaking of us. He's saying right here, the annihilation is for God's, Yahweh's kingdom of Christian Israel in wars and mongrelization. See? Not only death, but death by mongrelization. Accordingly, international Jewry threw Christendom into World Wars I and II, and now has started III in Korea. Since 1913, Jewry has caused the death of more than 144 million people. And now, since the end of World War II, the white people of Issachar, Israel, in Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania have been almost mongrelized to death by the Jews, in control of Russia, deporting every able-bodied man to slave labor in Russia and Siberia, then moved Mongol men into the vacant homes to act as studs in order to annihilate Issachar, Israel, in mongrelization in one generation. Did you just hear that? That is what the Houghton plan is. You heard what I just said, right? I'm not going to read it again. I'll briefly just tell you what the tribe of Issachar is in Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. And they've been mongrelized to death. After World War II, the Jews, the Russians, took all the males that they could from those places and they brought them to slave camps in Russia and Siberia, and then moved Mongol men into the vacant homes to act as studs in order to annihilate Issachar, Israel, in mongrelization in one generation. Now, I know you must be shaking your head right now. Jewry is now working on Anglo-Saxondom. Jew Anna Rosenberg, Assistant Secretary of Defense, has already proposed a bill to bring into the United States 5 million Negroes from the West Indies to fill the gap in war production, made vacant by drafting our white men of Israel to die in foreign battlefields such as Korea. Yet Rosenberg's plot is to bleed this nation's white men, then turn our own Negro citizens, along with the imported ones, loose on our own white women to destroy our race in one generation. The so-called gods and devils of the era of Kali, you remember that the era of Kali was from 1913 to 1953. Remember that that's a 40-year period. And you know what started in 1913. Without 1913, there is no World War I or World War II. You understand? So, the so-called gods and devils in the era of Kali are international Jews. The gods are international Jew bankers, and the devils are lay Jews indeed. The gods of finance have withdrawn their patronage after pilfering our gold and silver, and now have absolute control of money in the United States and the entire world. The little Jew devils have moved in with their communism and every form of evil from the bottomless pit and have corrupted us utterly. Corruption again. The word corruption again. See, this is what they do. Remember what I always read to you? That they are born spiritually dead from the womb. And it is born within them to corrupt man utterly. Again, I say corruption brings chaos. So he says right here again, the little Jew devils have moved in with their communism and every form of evil from the bottomless pit and have corrupted us utterly. A portion of the chaos, there we are, is sponsored by Christ-hating Jews in the National Council of Churches. and the National Conference of Christians and Jews. And Jews in B'nai B'rith supply the money while simultaneously preaching tolerance for Jews, and while dangling before the mentally dead Christians the lie that Jesus Christ, Yeshua, the Messiah, was a Jew as we consider Jews. Now, I believe when it says Yeshua the Messiah, that's Clifton putting those in, and that's fine by me because I would say the same thing. Is there any wonder, therefore, why enlightened Jews dare not reveal the secret about the truth, true basis of Jewry's communistic Freemasonic religion of bloodshed and conspiracy against God and man? No, the Jews tell us, ladies and gentlemen, that there's no such thing as any conspiracy against God and man. There's only been one entity that has ever conspired against man, and that's Al-Qaeda. I could puke. The world has been nothing but conspiracy against God and man since the garden, since the devil promised Eve she could have godhood. It's been nothing but conspiracy from then on. Now, these Jews, they say they're going to do this, they say they're going to do that, they've done a lot of things. But they're not going to do everything that they think they are. Now, let me make it very clear to you, so you connect the dots. They like to call one of their enemies white nationalists. Why would a nationalist be an enemy of a nation? Because the nationalists, the white nationalists, love America. They love their nation. Well, I'll tell you why. You see, it's because the Jews are internationalists. They have no nation of their own. They never will. 69 years and they still don't have that nation over there. It's not theirs. They only occupy it. I love to say it over and over. I don't care if you're sick of hearing it. It's a beautiful ringing bell to me. But they are internationalists. So they're not for any one nation. Although they are privy to their little occupation they have going on over there. They like to call it a state. But it's never really, really been recognized as a state. Not in truth. And so they are international, so they hate anyone that would be for their own nation. They want to make you what they are. They want to make you twice the child of hell that they are. And the scriptures tell you this. They want you to be an internationalist. They don't want you to love your nation. And if you do love your nation, you're a hater. And you're an enemy of the Jews. And you see, what the Jews do is they try to make any enemy that they have your enemy. They've tried to make Adolf Hitler our enemy, and they succeeded in it. Right now, they're trying to make Putin our enemy, because it's their enemy. And hopefully, they're not going to succeed in it. But they're still going to keep trying. And they're trying to make the white man the world's enemy now, too. And the nationalist. Because these are their enemies. And they'll do anything they can. They'll come up with ideologies. They'll pay you. Or say they'll pay you, but not pay you. Anybody that does a deal with the Jews is just like doing a deal with their father. You're going to come out with the short end of the deal. It's like being a military man of today. The Jew promises you're going to be paid certain amounts. I've talked to soldiers that came back and still hadn't got their money. They tell you this, they tell you that. Then when you come back, they tell you there'll be hospitals, special hospitals to take care of you. This turns out to be lies too. The veterans' hospitals are one of the lowest class hospitals in the world. So you go over there and you kill people, even your own brothers, for these Jews and for their fake money, their debt notes, and you get screwed in the deal. You go out and protest for George Soros at $25 an hour or whatever they're giving at this point. But then you don't get paid after you bash some of your brother's heads in. People just never ever learn about the Jews. They just never ever get it. Irrespective of whether or not a Jew in Christendom is Sephardic or Ashkenazim, Khazar, all of them claim descendants or descent from the Jews in the New Testament, who were the enemies of Jesus Christ and his disciples, and who murdered all of them. Right, they're Christ killers. Those Antichrist, Anti-Messiah, Anti-Anointed One, Jews were of one recognized group. Their descendants today have never lost their identity. As a racial body, they know that they are the same people who gave Jesus Christ all the trouble. But they're not a race. I've already explained that to you, that they are a mongrelized people. But no matter where they live, they're the same. They might as well be a race, but yet they're the most race-mixed of all people. The average Christian will also know these facts if they ever wake up to the truth. Therefore, observe in Matthew 3:7, 12:34, 23:33, and Luke 3:7, Jesus Christ and John the Baptist accuse them of being a generation of vipers. He writes race there. Genema in Greek for the word generation. You know, I could almost just take the G off and say enema, because they're worth about as much as an enema. It means a progeny or descendant in a continuous line. Viper is Echidna, a female viper, like Kali. According to Assyrian records now in the British Museum, London, England, that female viper is Ishtar, which is also Kali, the daughter of Aki, the water god of lustration. Now, that's the thing about Kali, is she was Cain's wife. She was also known as Ishtar. She's known as many names across the world. Now, Aki, A-K-K-I, is what Christians know as Lucifer, Satan and the devil. And Aki, father of Ishtar, was the serpent in Genesis 3, who, according to the Sethite Enoch in his book of Enoch, was called Azazel. He is the scapegoat of Leviticus 16:8, which says, "And Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats, one for the lot of Yahweh, and the other for the scapegoat." The word scapegoat is Azazel in Hebraic. The word cast is Nathan. Appoint. Upon is Alpene, in the face of. Lot is Goral, Lot as the face, the fate of one on whom falls the will of God. The scene in Leviticus 16 took place after God appointed our Israelite progenitors for his kingdom on earth. The goats symbolized that all non-Israelites are the goat nations, ladies and gentlemen, and Israel is Yahweh's sheep nations. The goat set free for the scapegoat, not as one, but for him, symbolized God, Yahweh, offers no salvation for Azazel's race of Jews, I don't call them a race, inasmuch as Leviticus 16:10, the word be is ama, confirm. Atonement is kafar, pitch as arranging one's fate. With is eth, always, for is bead, in behalf of. Therefore, Yahweh says in this Leviticus 16, but the goat on which the will of Yahweh fell to confirm the devil, Azazel, shall be presented alive before Yahweh to make an arrangement of his fate always, and to let him, the goat, go in behalf of a devil or as one of Azazel's household. In book three of this study, which we will never see, it looks like, ladies and gentlemen. See, he had five books. And there's somebody out there that has these books, but they're not going to release them to us. I suppose we're lucky to get the first two, right? In book three of this study, we will present the entire record that shows Yahweh offers no salvation to Azazel's race of Jews, whose human ancestral father, Cain, was Sargon. Now, see, there it is. Sargon of Akkad, right? That's what Comparé says. That's who he says Cain is. Sargon. So there's a little connection for you, according to Assyrian records, who was adopted by Aki, that's the devil, or Aki's own son. Cain married Ishtar, or Kali, Aki's daughter, and sealed the union in the ritual of the right hand shake, known as the Bel Pack, B-E-L, you know the god Bel, B-E-E-L, or Baal, are the other names of the devil. The son of Ishtar and Cain Sargon was Marduk, the Enoch in Genesis 4:17. Cain founded the Akkad dynasty in 3501 BC, Akkadia, was the devil's kingdom for extending from the Tigris-Euphrates rivers to the Indus River in the east. Matthew 23:33-35 and Luke 11:51 prove Jewry is the progeny of Cain and Ishtar. The generation in Matthew 23:36 is Genia, nation. The damnation in verse 33 is crisis with a K, condemnation. The hell is Gehenna, the valley of Hinnom, immediately south of Jerusalem, where the Cainite, Akkad, Amalek, Idumean mongrels murdered the children of Israel as sacrifices to Ishtar and Moloch. And Jewry cannot escape the condemnation. Satan as the devil has always been a Jew. In book three of this study, it's a shame. It hurts me that we can't have the book three too, you know. But maybe Yahweh will provide at some point. In book three of this study, we will show the genealogical record of the royal satanic line from the current devil to the serpent of Genesis 3. See, no wonder we wouldn't be able to see that book. Today he is the Asiatic Turco-Mongol Jew Prince Abdul Baraba Baha, the illegitimate son of the deposed Sultan of Turkey, Abdul Hamid II, deposed in 1909. Born to a Jew whore in Mecca, Arabia, in 1894, he exalted himself as the Almighty God in 1928 when living in Iraq. Apparently, he went to Moscow, Russia, in 1943 in order to proclaim God for Jewry in Russia by his Turco-Mongol kinsman Jew Joseph Vissarionovich, that's hard, Dugashvili, alias Joseph Stalin. Oh, that's Uncle Joe. So let me say this again. He went to Moscow, Russia in 43 in order to proclaim God for Jewry in Russia by his Turco-Mongol kinsman Jew Joseph Vissarionovich Dushkavili, alias Joseph Stalin, and his Jew cabal in the Kremlin, of which Mr. James C. Hollenbeck alludes to in his treatise, Jesus Christ and Antichrist, in which he says, some time ago in a great gathering of the world dignitaries and diplomats in London, Mr. Jew Molotov arose and said to a tired group of statesmen from all the United Nations organization that there was not a statesman anywhere in the world that had power or was capable of bringing peace to the world. But Mr. Molotov continued, we have that man, and when the hour has come, he will come forth. That we is world Jewry, not the Russian people. That man is not Joseph Stalin or his successor. Instead, he is Prince Abdul Baraba Baha, who was brought to these Christian United States of America in 1950 by Jew Owen Lattimore. You've heard of him. Remember, I always remind you that Eustace Mullins says, no matter what conspiracies we look into, the same names come up. Well, Owen Lattimore comes up in the money conspiracy and several others. So he was brought here, right, by Owen Lattimore and Jewry's Supreme Grand Orient Freemasonic Lodge of B'nai B'rith in New York City proclaimed him to be Jewry's God in the Western Hemisphere. He was then enshrined temporarily in John Hopkins University, Baltimore, Maryland. Good place for him. Under the alias Delua Hutuktu. It is believed that he is now in Asia or Russia waiting for B'nai B'rith to pull the last string taut in order for him to give the command utterly cripple America by industrial strikes called by the Jews in high places and unions. Then force President Truman or his successor to declare the situation constitutes national emergency in which the Jews will take control of the very beat of our nation. In the pretext of preventing anarchy and bloodshed. The victory of the proletariat. Remember that? Yet the blueprint shows if the disaster cannot be created, then Prince Abdul Baraba Baha stands ready to command the Jews in the Kremlin to start dropping atomic bombs on American cities in order to create an international emergency so he can come forth and be proclaimed God Emperor of the world for miraculously bringing the war to an end and prevent annihilation of man by telling Jewry the war has gone far enough. You see, ladies and gentlemen, this is proof that the Jews had plans in the era of Kali. The New World Order was supposed to have been brought forth in 1953. And this Abdul Baraha Baha, Baraba Baha, was supposed to be their Messiah, their Jewish Messiah. But their plans did not work out, did they? Therefore, we see that Yahweh's plans have preceded, have taken over their plans. So therefore, they have plans, I tell you all the time, for this New World Order, yet it's still not in even today. 1953 was quite a while ago, wasn't it? And they still don't have the New World Order in. They pretend they do, in the same way they pretend that people are watching football. They pretend people are watching their fake news outlets. But people aren't. Not as many as used to, that used to. Like it or not, Yahweh's plan is that the world will wake up, that the Israelite nation shall wake up, the nations of Israel, the true Israelite nations. And that's not Jewry's desire. They claim in their book, the Jews who created Hollywood, an empire of their own, they claim, and this is true, they have put us under a spell. And they have put us under spells like Christmas, which is designed to make you more materialistic and designed to help get the Reds out of the red at the end of the year. You know, the Jewish business owners. It was designed to get them out of the red and into the black, into the profit margin. Christmas is a spell put upon you, America. They used the Catholic Church to bring it in so that it would have Christian legitimacy. Praise you, Yahweh. He's telling you something right now. You know what I'm trying to say to you? The Jews use their Babylonian connections, which is, that's what the mystery of Babylon is, Mystery Babylon. It's a mystery how the Jews who claim that they hate the Catholics are part of this Mystery Babylon, because the Catholic religion, which is not a religion at all, it's a criminal cartel like the Judaism. It's amazing that those two work together. But then again, Freemasonry was warring against the Catholic Church, and we know that's run by Jewry, and they work together. And Satanism. The Catholic Mass is just one increment different than the Satanic Mass. And this is the truth. And it's amazing how they work together, because you know that the devils don't believe. They say they don't believe in the devil, and they say they don't believe in God. But yet, they're part of Mystery Babylon. And then the mystery religions. And then the New Age religions that Alice Bailey created, a lot of them. And then all the other religions in the world, including Judeo-Christianity, who pretends to fight against these other things, they all work together. Mystery Babylon. They are part of the false prophet. So the Jews used television and used Hollywood to put America under a spell. Remember? I will put a spell on them. You know, the witch from the Wizard of Oz. Yes, you know, but it must be done delicately, right? And they're going through the poppy fields, and they fall asleep. The poppy fields. You know the ones in Iraq that were starting to, die off, and we had to send our soldiers over there in a pretend war to get control of the poppy fields so that now they're growing healthy again, because that's where a lot of the world's heroin comes from. I will put them to sleep with heroin, was what she was saying. And notice how Dorothy, as she left the farm, it got more evil the closer she got to the Emerald City. Because green is the favorite color of the devil. So notice that as the trip went on and on, it became more evil and more evil as she got close to the city. And that's the way it is in reality in our world today. So, He continues on here in his book, The Super Deceiver, on the world horizon. Mr. James C. Hollenbeck says that as early as 1929, in connection with the building of the Temple of Solomon, many world-prominent Jewish people have already made a secret covenant with the Prince Abdul Baraba Baha. They fully believe he is their Messiah and will set up the temple worship and will rule from the city of Jerusalem. See their plans? Yahweh says, no way, Jose. See, that was talked about in 1929. They hadn't even had the place yet. Well, they got the place, but they still haven't instituted anything. There is no God, except they've claimed that the Jewish people themselves are the Messiah. Without question, Prince Abdul Baraba Baha is the Gog in Ezekiel 38 and 39, who the prophet says in this era would be the chief prince of Meshech, Magog, and Tubal. In the Hebraic, Gog means high mountain or mount, in which the word high is Al, A-L, most high, mountain, mount is Rum, M-U-R-U-M, exalt self. That word chief is Rosh, ruler. And the prince is Nasi, N-A-S-I, hello, exalted. Meshech was the ancient name of Moscow. Magog was the ancient name of Russia, Mongolia, Manchuria, and Siberia. Tubal was the ancient name for Tobolsk, Siberia. Thus, Gog would exalt himself, the Most High God, as the exalted ruler of Eurasia in the latter days. And Prince Abdul Baraba Baha has done that very thing, he says here. Moreover, he and world Jewry is the he in Ezekiel 17:11 through 16, in who were the Cainite Akkad mongrels who absorbed Esau to become the Idumeans of God's curse in Isaiah 34:5, out of whom came Prince Abdul Baraba Baha and Jewry today, who have Eurasia in the palms of their hands, to use and destroy God's kingdom of Christian Israel. Ladies and gentlemen, you can certainly see why this man was killed. You can certainly see why we don't have the full three books. Can you imagine what must have been said in the rest of these books? Are you connecting dots with me? Am I connecting with you? Make some comments on this video. Am I connecting with you? Am I helping you? Is Yahweh reaching you? Are you understanding what's being said here? Are you able to connect the dots? Now, I know many in my audience already can certainly connect the dots that have been listening to my shows from the beginning. But you new listeners out there, if you don't understand it, don't worry. Because you will if you continue to seek the truth. Not just in my shows, but all the shows of EFR. Because you will not be able to understand the big picture of what's happening until you have the biblical, I'm just going to use the word biblical. How about scriptural too? I love the word scriptural perspective. If you seek the truth and you learn all these things from people that don't know anything about the Bible and you believe you have the truth, well, you have a portion of the truth, but you do not have the big picture. The biggest picture of all can only be known when you read the scriptures and you understand who the Israelites are and who the Jews are. Two seed line theology. The war that was proclaimed by Yahweh in his judgment on the serpent, the woman, and Adam. I mean, really, I hope, it is my desire, each time I come out to give you these messages, I hold nothing back from you. I do not desire to have a power base over you so that you have to keep coming back to me like a Gnostic religion or like a Mr. Tex Mars spoon feeder. I give you everything I have, as Yahweh has given freely to me. And I want you to be wiser than I am. I'm not even that wise. I don't deem myself to be that wise. I mean, if I'm wise or have wisdom, it's because I have asked Yahweh since my youth to give me wisdom and knowledge. And I have done some work to learn. And nobody will be able to learn without working. However, I give to you freely, as we all do here at EFR. You know, right now you're listening to Eurofolk Radio on the Eurofolk Radio Network. And if you're wondering who I am, I'm David James. So let's continue. Today, I've really enjoyed what I was able to impart to you. And like I was saying, I ask Yahweh to reveal to his people through me, before I do the shows. And it seems he answers those prayers almost all the time, if not all the time. Other prayers in my life, he doesn't answer as quickly. And sometimes I wonder why. However, it is most important that he is able to speak through his servant, and I don't mean channeling. I just mean through the Holy Spirit. And that he reveals to me during these messages things that I reveal to you. And it is such a joy, and it is such a wonderful thing to know the things we know and be able to connect the dots that we're able to connect. Because, as I've said, somebody wrote me a wonderful comment this morning from yesterday's one-to-one show. And I commented back and I just said something about the fact that we should be thankful, because he was talking how I always drop truths all the time and give, you know, on a constant basis, and you'd have to read the comment yourself. But I told him, I said, you know, these are the things Yahweh is to be praised, because these are the things the angels wish they knew but didn't. They desired to know these things that you're learning today but don't know. And so, even though we are in a cursed age, ladies and gentlemen, we're in an age where Yahweh has given us things, not material things, but spiritual things, and knowledge and wisdom that is more precious than rubies. And these things keep us encouraged. You know, sometimes I sit down and I say I'm kind of bummed, but I'm not bummed at all, because Yahweh seems to protect me from being bummed out. And I've learned that we must control our feelings. And once you do, you'll have less problems in life. Many of the problems that you are having, ladies and gentlemen, are because of your feelings. Stop letting your feelings destroy your life. Your feelings are a tool that is used by the devil to sway you in any direction they wish to sway you in. Don't let them do it. Remember, submit to Yahweh and resist the devil, and he shall flee from you. Remember, I didn't say resist the devil and he shall flee from you. I said submit to Yahweh, resist the devil, and he shall flee from you. That's what Yeshua did on the roof with the devil when he was trying to tempt him. He quoted the scripture, he resisted the devil, and the devil was soon on his way. Don't let them use you through your feelings. Tell yourself the real truth, and that is your feelings are just not that important. They may seem important to you, and you may have been told that they are very important to you, and the most important thing in the world to you is your feelings. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Yeah. Well, let me be the first one to tell you, your feelings are not that important. My feelings are not that important. You want to stop a lot of trouble happening in your life? Don't be led around by the nose or the ear of your feelings. Keep a clean nose, kid, you know. I forget the saying. But we have a few minutes left here. And as usual, I didn't get that far, but it doesn't matter how far we get in this. This is, everything that was said here is important as far as I'm concerned. Or at least I feel it is. No. Well, let's look at this and just read the last part of this particular thing. So, Christians know the awfulness of intangible Satan. Yet when realizing he is amidst us in tangible form, the awfulness is magnified to what it is. The Jews are actually devils in shoe leather. It is so awful, it is similar to one being locked in a dark house with a sinister monster, which at any moment may reach out and rend one from limb to limb. Jewry is that sinister skulking beast. His presence in our racial house is the reason, and the only reason, there is spiritual and physical death amidst our people. Any old-fashioned Christian preacher knows the wages of sin is spiritual death. They know the awfulness of spiritual death. Yet only a few know about the profound sinister forces which cause spiritual death. It is caused by us being forced to exist in the satanic beast system conjured up by the serpent race of Jews on purpose to destroy man. That system is what one observes in Revelation 13:4, which says, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" Then, in protocol number 4 of Jewry's Luciferian priests, those prophesied words come forth in plain English when it says, "Who and what is in position to observe an invisible force?" And that is precisely what our force is. Let me read that again. Who and what is in position to observe an invisible force? And that is precisely what our force is. Let's connect dots, folks, because we're almost through here. What did I tell you about the government and about Freemasonry and about the hierarchy? I told you that the Jews are the invisible, and the visible, the senators, they take the heat, right? They're paid well to take the heat when they do the evil that the Jews want them to do, right? The military, the Jew is behind paying the military, and the military goes out and gets their limbs blown off. They take the heat. The invisible Jew in the background does nothing but print up fake dollars. The Jew Federal Reserve is the invisible who runs democracy, who runs the government. The government, which is a hollow shell. In Freemasonry, we know that Weishaupt was told to infiltrate Freemasonry and create an invisible secret society within the visible society. Therefore, the Freemasons with Bill Cooper get all the hits, and the Jews sit in the background laughing. And again, Alice Bailey, her book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy. The hierarchy has been invisible for a long time. The demons have been invisible for a long time. The Jews have remained invisible in many ways for a long time, and the devil himself has remained invisible. Now the aliens are around, which is a manifestation of the hierarchy. That hierarchy are the demons. The Jews are coming out in society. They're externalizing. And the devil himself will externalize eventually, I would assume, and has many times. So the protocol says, again, just to remind you, who and what is in position to observe an invisible force? And that is precisely what our force is, says the Jews. I'm smiling, ladies and gentlemen. I'm smiling because I can see. I can hear. I can speak. I see the truth. I hear the truth. I speak the truth. I love the truth. I promote the truth. There is nothing more important than truth. Because Yahweh is truth. The Holy Spirit is truth. The spirit of prophecy is truth. The Word of God is truth. There's nothing more important. Do you love the truth, dear listener? Or would you like to shut me up? Would you like to shut down your own chance to know your Father in heaven? For liars and fake news outlets? Would you like to help kill your own race to shut the truth up like they shut up Yeshua, Jesus Christ? They killed him. They shut him up. And they killed the disciples because they were telling the truth, and they shut them up too. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. And until next time, study to show thyself approved.